Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We have four stories that I'd like to cover. You may note that as we proceed here and cover these stories that there is a common denominator between them. Let's address them one at a time. The first is something that we know is a problem, but just I don't think most people are aware as to the extent of the problem and how this problem emerged. We're going to first turn our attention to the Central African Republic. Now, Red Cross workers yesterday said that they recovered 44 bodies from the streets. They also said that six Chadian peacekeepers were murdered. This is in the former French colony. But other judicial authorities said that in addition to that, that they had yesterday uncovered a mass grave with a minimum of 30 bodies in it, and they think there are many more, and that most of the 30 bodies that they found in the mass grave showed signs of being tortured. Most of the killings were immediately outside a military base that is used by the Seleka rebels. Now, so who are these Seleka rebels? What has happened in the Central African Republic? And it's interesting, the first thing that you learn about the Central African Republic, it's not a majority Muslim nation. No, 15% or so of the Central African Republic's population is Islamic. These Seleka rebels, they are, however, Muslim. They seized power in March. It's interesting the way that they went about to doing so. They became riotous and terrorists, and they went into to cities that they seized power. They booted the Christians out of the cities. They claimed the cities for themselves. They burned down the churches in the cities. They robbed the homes and possessions of those that had to flee them. And so, unable to counter this, the government of the Central African Republic chose to form a treaty with a peace treaty with the Seleka rebels. Now, we have learned from the Quranic story of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, because the Quran says that any treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim, and we find that Muhammad, who signed a treaty with the Meccans the following year, came back and breached every aspect of the treaty. He only used the treaty to make the Meccans easier prey. The same thing was true with the treaty with the Seleka rebels, these Muslims. They formed a peace treaty. The government relaxed, and they promptly violated every aspect of the treaty and seized power. And so now, in a 85% Christian country, you have the 15% minority Muslims in charge. So the rebels, these Muslims, seized power in March after breaching a peace treaty. They immediately unleashed, and this is reading directly from a CNN article, unleashed a wave of looting and killing on the mostly Christian population. What did Muslims do when they were in power? The first thing they did, once you mixed the Islamic religion, politics, and military, when they were in charge, what did they do? The economy of the empowered Muslims was looting. It has always been that way. Now, the first Muslims, after Muhammad's death in the first 100 years, went and looted the world. That was the golden age of Islam, as they looted the world. And so you now have these the government of the Central African Republic becoming Islamic and unleashing a wave of looting and killing on the mostly Christian populations. Thousands of French and African troops have arrived and have struggled to contain the violence. The mostly Muslim Seleka, and it's not mostly Muslim, it's entirely Muslim Seleka, and the Christian self-defense militias have begun now to carry out, as the press reports it, tit-for-tat attacks on each other in the local population. This is a different response in the Central African Republic than what we see in Egypt, for example. It's different than what we see in Syria, for example. It is different from what we see in Iraq, for example. In all of those places that I have mentioned, Muslims are an overwhelming majority, typically 80 to 90%, sometimes 95% majority. And so the Christians do not fight back. They are terrorized by the Muslims. Their homes are burned. Their women are raped. Their children are enslaved. Their churches are razed. And so they are terrorized by the Muslims in all of those countries, but they don't respond. They simply become victims. Because if they were to respond, and if they were to try to defend themselves, the overwhelming Islamic population would make short order of the few that remain, annihilating all of them instantly, burning them alive. But in the Central African Republic, 85% of the population is being victimized by Islamic terrorism. And so as the majority, they are responding. Now, they're responding with machetes, but they are responding. This is what is likely to transpire in Nigeria, where the Boko Haram have killed tens of thousands of Christians and terrorized them. We are going to see the Christians ultimately take up arms to defend themselves. Well, that's what we have now in the Central African Republic. This particular article goes on to read that the Gregorios Geriontons, the head of the International Committee of the Red Cross delegation, said that 44 bodies were only a fraction of those that were killed in Bangui in the last 2 days, and that his team has only been able to go into certain parts of the city. Violence is at an extremely high level, the Red Cross reported to Reuters. We have information about more bodies in certain parts of town, which we've been unable to access because the fighting is so intense. All religious. A representative of the medical charity Medicine Sans Frontiers, Doctors Without Borders, at Bangui's main hospital said that it has seen more than 50 people since Wednesday night with gunshot or machete wounds from fighting that raged for hours across the capital. This is the kind of hell that will be witnessed around the globe between 15 to 20 years from now. Some say the bloodshed has little to do with religion because they're incapable of recognizing the common denominator between the religion of Islam and the terrorist hell that is being perpetrated on non-Muslims and also Muslims by fellow Muslims around the globe. We have rendered an entire generation that is incapable of processing information rationally, and as a result, we have those who speak from political and media rostrums that are completely ignorant of the role that Islam plays and it being the common denominator in all of these stories. But yet some say that the bloodshed has little to do with religion in a nation where Muslims and Christians have long lived in peace. Instead, they blame a political battle for control over resources in one of Africa's most weakly governed states. Yes, you have an all-Islamic militia following the strategy deployed by Mohammed, ravaging the population, looting them, as is approved in Islam. The Eighth Surah says that stealing is lawful and good. You know, the Ninth Surah says the treaties between Muslims and non-Muslims are not binding on the Muslim. The Ninth Surah tells Muslims that they must all be jihadists, that to be a peaceful Muslim is reprehensible, that you cease to be a Muslim if you're peaceful, and that the jihadist Muslims have to kill you. The Eighth Surah tells Muslims that they must wage jihad against the entire world, fighting until the only religion is Islam. Bengui's public sector, according to the Red Cross, has discovered scores of bodies clustered near the Roe military camp on a hill at the edge of Bengui, just outside of the Muslim encampment. Some of the bodies were tied up. Others had big gashes or wounds, which showed that they had been tortured. Yeah, it's not enough in Islam just to kill. Torture is always part of the mix. They were murdered and tortured somewhere else and dumped there. Yeah, inside the camp, and then dumped outside. The Christian militia, known as anti-Balaka, which means anti-machete. The Christian militia means that we're opposed to this, the machete mutilation of our people. They now even accuse the Chadian forces for supporting the Seleka rebels, very much like the United Nations supports Hezbollah in Lebanon. A related review of what is occurring there, so we might have a little better perspective on this, reads that the seizure of power by the Seleka rebels in March. Now, this particular story, I must tell you, comes from Al Jazeera. So when you find a slant pointing the finger directly at Islam here, don't think that this was written by the Christian Science Monitor. The story I'm sharing with you now comes directly from the pages of Al Jazeera. It says, the seizure of power by Seleka rebels in March unleashed a wave of looting, rapes, and massacres. You know that looting is considered good in Islam. That's how the Eighth Surah begins. It's the title of the Eighth Surah of the Quran. Plunder is lawful and good. Looting, stealing, good in Islam. Rape is considered authorized in Islam. The Quran authorizes rape with one's captives, sex with one's captives. Muhammad was a rapist. And as for massacres, Muhammad murdered everyone within the camel ride of Yathrib, Medina, and Mecca. He was an assassin and mass murderer. And so Muslims are following his example. They even say that these are mostly Muslim fighters. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're trying to come to a better appreciation of what's taking place in the Central African Republic. And this story we're considering because not only is it a horrendous event, a great scar on humanity, but because it is also indicative of what we're going to experience over the next 20 years, the kind of religious infighting that is taking place now in the Sudan, and this mix of politics and treaties and patriotism and religion and of Islamic rage and people eventually defending themselves and picking up arms to defend themselves and looting on a mass scale, rapes on a mass scale. It is the world that we're headed towards. I can't tell you if it's going to begin in the West in 10 years or 15 years, but I can tell you within 20 years, the earth will be ravaged by what we're reading here. This will not be a microcosm. It's not only going to be taking place in Egypt, in Libya, in Mali, in the Central African Republic, in Iraq, in Yemen. It will be taking place throughout the world. So here's the story as it's reported by Al Jazeera. The seizure of power by Seleka rebels in March unleashed a wave of looting, of rapes, and of massacres by the mainly Muslim fighters, sparking reprisals by Christian fighters known as anti-Balaka, anti-machete. More than 700,000 people have been displaced by this conflict, leading some to fear atrocities on the scale of the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. That's how savage this has become. All because Muslim fighters, known as Seleka rebels, began a wave of looting, rapes, and massacres after seizing power. A resident told Reuters on Sunday, it's not the anti-machete, it's the Seleka who have massacred the people. They've massacred everyone within their reach, even women, children. Tensions are running high in the Central African Republic after the overnight lynching of a Seleka colonel in Bangui. The attack came after three other Seleka fighters were killed by the French army patrols on Friday when they were found with weapons at the African Union checkpoint. The three men that were killed by the French were later found to have been part of the presidential guard. They were assigned to guard the head of the Seleka movement. That, of course, angered the Seleka Muslims, who then called for the immediate withdrawal of the 1,600 French troops and declared that they were their enemy. Seleka rebels, of course, blamed the lynching not on the French, but on the Christian fighters. A bit more history here is important because of the size and scale of the atrocities being perpetrated in the Central African Republic, and also because of how this is a canary in the mine of warning us as to what's going to happen next. It's very much like what we witnessed with Cyprus and the confiscation of savings being something that's going to be experienced around the globe. This is what the world has in store for it. The fellow's name is Michael De Jotia, D-J-O-T-O-D-I-A. He is the leader of the Seleka Islamic Coalition. His rebels seized power in the Central African Republic of Bangui on March 24th. And they have established a new government comprised of their own loyalists, fellow Muslims. Francis Boise, who was ousted in the military coup, has fled the country and has reported to be in the West African state of Cameroon. Now, in the case of Francis Boises, he made the tragic mistake of trying to resolve this conflict with the Muslims by forming a peace treaty with them. Diplomacy was his strategy. A diplomacy with a fundamentalist, whether that fundamentalist be a communist, socialist, secular humanist or Muslim, is an absolute waste of time. It's counterproductive. It's why negotiating peace with honor with the North Vietnamese was counterproductive. It is why negotiating a peace treaty in Afghanistan with the Taliban is counterproductive. It is an utter and complete waste of time. He signed his own death certificate and that of his people. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're trying to peel back the onion on what has become a grotesque scar against humanity in the Central African Republic, perpetrated principally by Muslims. When they came to power create the auspices of congeniality, one of the opposition leaders, the one that didn't flee, Nicholas Tangay, was named prime minister. And so while De Jotia named himself as the Minister of Defense, in addition to being president, began to negotiate a treaty, a peace accord, that was designed to create a coalition regime between the various parties. Guess what? By late March, the Seleka rebels, the Muslims, including their leader, accused the remnants of the Boise's government of not adhering to the peace agreement. This is exactly as what happened in the Treaty of Hudaybiyah back in the time of Muhammad. Although it was Muhammad that breached every aspect of the peace accord, where he said he would not kidnap Meccans, he would not rape Meccans, he would not rob Meccans, and he would not kill Meccans for 10 years. And Muhammad immediately began doing all of those things until he conquered Mecca a year later. He blamed the Meccans for violating the treaty, which was a complete farce. It's the same thing as there's an alleged treaty between Muhammad and the three Jewish communities in Yathrib, today's Medina. And Muhammad violated every aspect of this alleged treaty, and yet he blamed the Jews for their own demise. So this is exactly the Hadith story and the Quran account that these Muslims are following. If you want to know what they're going to do, all you have to do is read the Quran and Hadith. Pick up a copy of Prophet of Doom or go online. It's free at prophetofdoom.net, and you can see exactly what they're going to do. So they accuse the established government of not adhering to the peace agreement, and so they immediately began to seize towns and cities, creating panic inside and outside of the country. Jotodia immediately suspended the constitution upon taking the capital, Bengui, and reappointed his own choice of prime minister. Within the new government, they controlled all aspects of government. Now, Jotodia was born in the northeast region of the country at Vakaika. He is purely Islamic. He's the first Muslim leader of the country since it gained independence from France, because Muslims only represent 15% of the Central African Republic's population. The majority of the country is Christian. But now a 15% minority is dominating affairs. And with them in control, there is rape, there is looting, there is mass murder. This is something to keep in mind, because during the late 1920s, a decided minority of Germans were Nazis. In fact, even at the time that the Nazis became the dictatorial regime in Germany, only 15% of Germans were Nazis. And yet they imposed their will on Germany, and it became a nation of death. The same thing is true with Russia. When the communists opposed the czarists, they represented initially about 3% of the population. That grew to about 15% at the time that they, with armed conflict, deposed the czars and took control of that country. It's the same thing that happened in China with Mao Zedong. It doesn't take a majority of Muslims to seize control of a country to bring hell upon the population. The seizure of power, this report says, by rebels in the Central African Republic is following a worrisome trend on the continent, where coups have taken place in Mali, and in addition to Mali, in Libya, as well as Egypt. All of those have a common denominator: Islam. Muslim rebels in Libya, armed by Qatar with weapons produced by the United States, overturned a secular government and established an Islamic terrorist regime, and have become the gun runners for Islam. This spread out into Mali. It is now spread out into the Central African Republic. It has infested Egypt. And as a result of this, the Middle East is ablaze in Islamic fundamentalism. Also in neighboring Niger, the U.S. has established a drone station and is deploying hundreds of special forces. Did you know that the United States has boots on the ground in Niger? The dispatching of troops to Niger was part of a broader policy, which will see the presence of 3,500 more U.S. troops on the African continent, and an effort designed ostensibly, quote, to fight terrorism. So the United States is joining in the fray with boots on the ground. It is how we are being lured into yet another war. The U.S., Canada, and other European states have mining interests in the Central African Republic. We're there for the, not for the people, but for the money. The country produces diamonds, gold, copper, iron ore, manganese, uranium, and graphite. Now you know what has caused the problem and who is fighting with whom and why. You also now have a window into our future. This is another story. It has a common denominator with the last one. A judge in Saudi Arabia has recommended that imprisoned blogger Raif Badawi go before a high court on a charge of apostasy, which carries the death penalty upon conviction. Apostasy. What is apostasy in Islam? The Quran says that if a Muslim recants his faith, if a Muslim rejects Islam, that he is an apostate and that he must be killed. So in Islam, in a country dominated by Muslims, if you are born a Muslim, you cannot reject Islam without being killed for having done so. That is the nature of this religion. It not only spawns, as we saw in the Central African Republic, looting, rape, and mass murder. There is no freedom in Islam. Insaf Hadir initially told CNN on Wednesday that her husband had been sentenced to death. She later clarified to CNN that the judge has recommended that he be tried for denouncing Islam and also for apostasy. Denouncing Islam is to speak against the religion. In an Islamic country, it is a crime punishable by death to criticize any aspect of Islam. To say that the Quran is the dumbest book ever written by any rational or moral standard, which is a statement of fact, is a crime punishable by death. To say that Muhammad was a pedophile, a rapist, that he was a mass murderer, a slave trader, and a ruthless terrorist, all of which is undeniable fact, and that therefore you have to be a fool to be a Muslim to follow his advice, is punishable by death. And being an apostate is someone who rejects Islam, who was formerly a Muslim. Apostasy carries the death penalty in Saudi Arabia because it is an Islamic state, according to Amnesty International. Well, according to the Quran. In July, a Jeddah criminal court found this man whose crime was to operate a blog that was critical of the Saud royal family. The criminal court found Badawi, who has been in prison since June of 2012, guilty of insulting Islam through his Free Saudi Liberals website. Badawi was sentenced to 7 years in prison and 600 lashes. Now, a person will most likely die after about anything more than about 30 lashes, the way they're applied. So to give someone 600 lashes would take them to the precipice of death some 20 times, where they could then be taken to the precipice of death in anguishing pain, their flesh ripped from their bodies, allowed to heal for 3 weeks and to do it over again. It would take 2 years of constant torment, anguish, torture, to inflict 600 lashes and 7 years imprisonment. Why? Because he told the truth. In Saudi Arabia, a nation that Americans enrich at astonishing numbers because of OPEC, a nation that America supplies some $70 billion worth of our most advanced weapons. Badawi's legal troubles started shortly after he began the Free Saudi Liberals website in 2008. He was detained and questioned about the site. Some clerics even branded him as an unbeliever or apostate. Human rights groups accused Saudi authorities of targeting activists through the courts and travel bans. Amnesty International has said that Badawi is a clear case of intimidation against him and others who would seek to engage in open debates about the issues that Saudi Arabians face in their daily lives. You see, in Saudi Arabia, there is no distinction between politics and religion. The Sauds, from whom Saudi Arabia is named, are warlords. They became the most powerful warlords when the warlord family named Saud allied with Wahhab, who was the most outspoken fundamentalist Muslim imam in the country. We know about Wahhabism, fundamentalist Islam, Salaf Islam, the Islam of the terrorists. He and Saud formed an alliance. That alliance was then deployed by the Brits, and depicted in the film Lawrence of Arabia, was depicted by the Brits where they bribed and armed this coalition of Wahhabists and the Saud warlord and his militia to fight the Ottoman Turks in World War I. As a result of the Brits ultimately prevailing, they rewarded the Sauds with their own personal fiefdom in the land of Saudi Arabia. And it is now this amalgamation of fundamentalist Islam and the Saud warlord family that this blogger was doing the right thing, telling the truth about them, exposing them, condemning them, as opposed to what the United States does, which is arming them and enriching them. And for that, 600 lashes, 7 years in prison. So welcome back to the final segment for today's program. We'll be back with you on Monday. There is a common denominator in these stories. I'm sure you have recognized it. Here now in Egypt, yesterday, Egyptian's interim government, which is nothing more than a military junta, officially declared the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Now, that's amazing. It was for the Muslim Brotherhood that two-thirds of Egyptians voted a little over a year ago. So Egypt now, recognizing that the Muslim Brotherhood actually appointed Sisi, who's the general that led the coup, that he has turned against the organization that appointed him head of the military. And he has labeled the organization for whom two-thirds of Egyptians voted a terrorist organization, and said that anyone who is a member of the group will be punished. So, two-thirds of Egyptians are now the enemy of the junta that took power. Now, I'm telling you, the Muslim Brotherhood is a fundamentalist Islamic group. They're rotten to the core. You know, an enemy of the Muslim Brotherhood is a proponent of civility and morality. But how do you, in a country where just a year ago, two-thirds of the people voted in support of the Muslim Brotherhood, go about calling the same group a terrorist organization and then announcing that anyone who affiliates the group will be punished? Hossam Issa, a interim minister of higher education, that's kind of funny in an Islamic country, and the deputy prime minister announced the cabinet's decision on the state-run television. Because why? It's now a military junta. They have a state-run media. Quote, the government reiterates that there will be no return to the past under any circumstances in Egypt. The state and the people will never succumb to the terrorism of the Muslim Brotherhood, whose crimes have gone far beyond all moral, religious, and human limits, he said. Now, mind you, I'm no fan of the Muslim Brotherhood. And while the Muslim Brotherhood was reprehensible in every imaginable way, it is the military junta who has been the most deadly. Thousands of Egyptians were murdered by the military junta in the most egregious assault on the Egyptian people in recorded history. It is the junta, the military regime, that is the most immoral and the most violent. The government will also punish, it says, anyone giving the group financial support. So if you are in any way affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, as are two-thirds of Egyptians, you will be punished. You won't be encouraged to disassociate with them. You will be punished. So the military junta is saying two-thirds of the Egyptian people, they no longer matter. As a matter of fact, they're worse than no longer mattering. They are now the enemy. Hundreds of supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood took to the streets in towns and cities across Egypt after the announcement. The terrorist coup authorities, so they're labeling one another terrorists, are false agents for the Zionists, announced the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, because Islam is so one-track, that the Quran is so anti-Semitic, that anybody who is opposed to a fundamentalist Muslim automatically has to be a Zionist. You know, I wrote the book Prophet of Doom, and it uses Muhammad's words and deeds to expose and condemn the religion of Islam. And no better way to do it. It's irrefutable, because the only way that you can challenge it is to condemn the words and deeds of Muhammad. And if you do that, which is the purpose of the book, you end up exactly where the book leads you, which is to be disgusted by Islam. Well, in the case of Islam, since it is universally anti-Semitic, more anti-Semitic than Hitler's Mein Kampf, you've got Muslims in opposition to the Islamic military blaming Jews. Now, by the way, while I am not Jewish, and I have no affiliation whatsoever with the Israeli government, even though I'm accused of being Jewish and being the lapdog of the Jewish government and have no affiliation to them whatsoever, I am a Zionist. Yahweh's a Zionist. It means it's from the Hebrew word Sion. And Sion in Hebrew speaks of the signposts along the way. Yahweh says that he has established signposts on the way to him. I've taken the time to read those signs. I follow those signs. They are Yahweh's signs. And so if you're going to be a member of the covenant, you too are a Zionist.